The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.
Now, as you've been hearing on the news, a total of 35 people, including 21 males, 9 females and 5 children, were deported last night on a flight from Dublin Airport to Nigeria. Now, here to talk about this is Minister of State for Migration, Colin Brophy. Minister, good morning.
Good morning, Pat.
Now, first of all, why this flight now?
Well, this flight is part of an ongoing series of flights which we're doing in relation to deportation. And the reason why they come about is because obviously we have a firm, fair and effective system for people who arrive into our country to seek international protection. But at the end of the process, and we encourage people actually to go through it, and if they're not successful, to voluntarily leave. But if at the end of that process they don't, we have a system now where we have deportation flights. And last night's one was the third one, and it went to Nigeria.
How long have they been here?
On an average of about 4 years. Some a little
now,
longer,
this is
some
a joke.
Probably a little less.
Minister, this is a joke. 4 years.
Well,
Four years.
Nothing about this. Sorry,
come on.
Pat, nothing about this is a joke. 4 years is
I'm
not
saying
acceptable.
The process is absolutely ridiculous, nonsensical if it takes 4 years to do this kind of process. It's unfair to everybody. It's those who set up a home here. 4 years later, they're told, out you go. It should be much quicker than that.
And absolutely agree with you, Pat. And that's why I say nothing about this is a joke. And it's very important in terms of language that we recognise the fact. So one of the things that myself and Minister O'Callaghan are absolutely committed to do is to completely overhaul the process. We're introducing legislation which comes from the Migration Pact on a pan-European level. And that will see that process radically shortened, because we believe, like what you're saying there, that it's absolutely important that as part of a firm, fair and effective system that people come in, but they get a quick decision and they're told, now, that's the decision. Given the right to appeal, but still within hopefully a 12-week framework, we'll have a situation where people will then be moving on and not having this elongated process which we have at the moment.
Yeah, now it would seem like you've just been in government for a few weeks, but in fact, your party's been in government for a decade.
Absolutely. And this process, as you know, has been one where we had a large spike in numbers coming in. We had to put in place, which we have, by the way, and very successfully, both in during my term, Minister O'Callaghan's term, and before that, Minister Helen McEntee's term, resources and extra resources to deal with this. But underpinning it, we believe this new legislation will deliver the type of reforms that we want to see in terms of time, because I absolutely agree with you, Pat. If we want to have a system, which is also, by the way, not only fair to Irish people and Irish communities affected by IPAS centres and affected by people who are going through the process, but critically is also fair to the people going through the process, because they want a decision and they want it quickly and they want to know. So it's a win-win for everybody, which is why we're bringing in this new legislation.
Now, what about people who are coming across the border, entering the EU via Northern Ireland? What have you done there? Because that's also part of your responsibility.
Yeah, well, we work very closely, but myself and Minister Callaghan work very closely with our UK counterparts to work on the fact, obviously, we have a common travel area between the United Kingdom and the Republic of Ireland. But we are working to make sure that we have systems and processes in place which enable us, and that includes doing everything, including increased number of spot checks, etc., to try and limit and control that movement. It is important that we recognise that people will arrive into our country. They will be coming into our country for a variety of reasons. Everybody from tourists to Irish people going backwards and forwards, etc. But if someone is coming in, we want to try and as much as possible be able to say to them, if you're coming in and you're going to claim international protection, we want to process you quickly and then give you a decision quickly. And most importantly, then, if that decision is not in your favour, to have you leave quickly.
How many people are in the IPAS system at the moment?
So that number varies. Actually, the thing at the moment, which is quite positive, is that our numbers this year are actually going down. We have had a decrease in the number. We've had those numbers up to 30-something thousand. We've had them down to 20-something thousand, and they're coming down. And I think that is a very positive situation. But we want to have, and we believe we can have, a much better organised and effective IPAS system.
Okay, I'm just trying to figure out.
Just by having state-owned
And we'll talk about City West in a moment. But this business of 20,000 perhaps at the moment in the IPAS system. What is your timeline for actually processing all of those people and getting to the point where anyone coming in will get a decision within 12 weeks?
Well, what we are moving towards is June 2026. So we're going to implement the legislation, going to put it into the Dáil in the second half of this year. We are then going to have a pan-European system, which will be kicking in from June 2026 onwards. And that will mean that across the European Union, that people will have that certainty that in the vast majority of cases, when people arrive, they will have a process that will take approximately that period of time. And that, by the way, includes, due to the changes in legislation, will include the appeal process for people as well.
Okay, so, but the 20,000 who are currently on the list, and you know, more being added, and I presume a few are being eliminated from that list. How are you going to cope with that backlog?
Well, what we've actually done to cope with the backlog is we've actually increased the staffing, and we've increased the numbers, and we've increased the resources. And we're in a situation where, thankfully, in the last number of months, we are actually clearing people off the list who have been on the backlog. We do believe it's actually very important to clear that backlog and to have a situation that we can move to as quickly as possible after the Migration Pact becomes law, that we will have actually that 12-week processing period for everybody coming in.
Do you have any fast-track process for people who may have entered seeking asylum and maybe their claim is a bit dodgy, but who have turned out to be useful members of society here, doing valuable jobs that we need people for? Have you any fast-track process to allow them to remain?
No. What we do is we have two processes, and it's very important. We have a process whereby if we need people and if they have key skills and if they can contribute, and a vast number of people who come in to our country who come in, they come in legally. They come in with a work visa. They come in to actually contribute, and I welcome that. But if you come in and you're coming in through the other system where you're coming in to claim international protection, we have one firm, fair and effective system which deals with you, and that's the way it should be. So you don't have a situation.
No, I'm wondering though whether people who might be in the IPAS system and who say, by the way, I've got this very good job I'm doing, I'm delivering for UPS or whoever it might be, and I'd love to stay. Can I apply from within Ireland for the right to stay? Or do you have to apply from outside Ireland for the right?
You should be applying from outside of Ireland. We have two processes. We have the work visa process where you come in and you're coming in to contribute to work, and you have the IPAS process. And I think it is very important that people choose the correct process based on what
they
want.
Okay, so you'd have to go out to come back in again.
And that's, I believe, the correct process in terms of fairness. Yeah. Because at the end of the day, the important thing about this is to recognise that we do have both sets. We have people coming in who are working right across our country in a range of variety of skills and jobs in the public and private sector. They have come in because we have asked them to come in because we need them. But we also have people who are going through the IPAS process.
Okay, now some of the texts come in. I'm the principal of the school where three of the five children who were deported went to school. Can you please ask the Minister of State what I'm supposed to do to tell all the children who are wondering where their friends have gone? And also what supports will be put in place for us as a school to recover from this terrible news? They've been here for 3 years, by the way.
Mm-hmm. Well, we obviously, in the case of a deportation where, first and foremost, a couple of things I want to say on this, it will be a family unit. So people will leave with their parents or a parent. And that is obviously the fairness way of doing it. The second thing is that right through the process, you have to remember this, initially, people have the right to voluntarily leave, and we encourage that. If you're not going to be successful, you can voluntarily return, and we will guide you and support you in doing that. And then you're served with a deportation notice, and then you must leave. So it is always regrettable if people's here a period of time, and that's why, to go back to your earlier point, I think we must get away from that point of having people here a number of years.
What advice do you have for that principal? It's a very simple question. What is he supposed to tell the kids in the school about their three schoolmates who have now vanished?
What is literally the case is what, and I think the majority of people will understand, both in the school context and in the community context, is that this is a process which we're engaging reluctantly but have to do, which is a fair process and an outcome that is inevitable if you choose not to leave. And obviously we want to keep family units together. So where someone has been adjudicated that they don't have the right to remain, which would have been the parents, then the children, obviously, to keep that family unit together, will have gone with their parents back to what is their home country.
Okay, but there's no advice anyway for that principal. Another one, that's disgraceful. Those children may only have known life here. They could be in school, etc. Well, they are, as we heard. And living in direct provision for years is so traumatic for children. It's horrendous. And the minister sounds proud of the fact that these kids have been deported.
I'm not proud of the fact that anybody is deported, but what I am quite willing to stand over and absolutely state is that we have and want to have a firm, fair and effective system, which gives people the opportunity who genuinely can make their case to remain in Ireland and to be granted international protection. But where somebody comes here and doesn't make that case, you must have as part of the end of that process a deportation process. And I am sorry, but I don't apologise for that.
Okay, that's fair.
That is part of a firm and fair and effective system.
How do you process someone who's lost their passport? Why do you not process immigrants at the point of departure as the American state does when we were going there in large numbers and there was a large number of rejected migrants? Now, we have obviously pre-clearance in Dublin and Shannon, and you can't be having pre-clearance all over the UK airports and ports and so on. But that idea that someone arrives in an airport in Dublin, whatever about a ferry port where maybe it might be easier to slip through the net, but you arrive at Dublin airport, no passport. How did you get on the plane? That's the question I'm asking. So why do we not have systems that prevent the embarkation initially?
Well, as anybody knows who is boarding a plane to come to Ireland, even within the common travel area between Britain and Ireland, you will be asked for travel documentations. You will be asked to produce information to get you on the plane. You can't just walk up and do it. So obviously somebody got on a plane with sufficient documentation to get onto it. They arrive, and we do now, and we have increased the number of what we call disembarkation spot checks, where we have literally got officials at the door of the aircraft checking to see. People will say their documentation is gone. If they do that, then they immediately end up having to engage with the process whereby they will have to explain why they've arrived without documentation. And they, at that point, would make a claim for international protection.
No, hang on a second. They got on with the document. If they don't have that document when they're disembarking, surely this should be just put back on the plane. Sorry. This is what happens in many jurisdictions, Australia, the United States and so on. You had a legitimate document getting on the aircraft. Show us that document or else get back on the plane. And I'm not being deliberately tough, but this is reality.
No, Pat, you're not being deliberately tough. You're making a point which a lot of people make to me. But under the international laws which we have signed up to, if somebody arrives into Ireland, they are entitled, if they arrive, to make a claim for international protection. And that must be adjudicated and processed. And that's why we want to toughen the way in which we do that in a firm and fair way and reduce the amount of time that takes. But under our current international laws that we work within, if someone arrives into Ireland, they have the right to make that claim. And there are people who would say, like yourself, why don't we just turn them around instantly? But in actual fact, once they make that claim, we have to adjudicate how they've got here, why they got here, and whether or not they genuinely do have a case. And once we adjudicate one way or the other, then we need to be turning these people and saying to them, you can either stay or you must go.
Now, you talk, Minister, about more accommodation for IPASS and the idea of buying City West, which provoked a protest on the N7 yesterday, which greatly disrupted the rush hour traffic. And it was the intention of the organisers to exactly so do.
Well, obviously, look, two things. People have the right to protest. We always have the right to protest in this country, and people have been engaged in protest. I believe protests should always be proportionate, and they should respect the fact that other people are trying to live their lives. I was actually in my constituency yesterday in a different part of the constituency. There was heavy traffic congestion all over because it was raining, and it was mid-afternoon on a rainy day. So I'm not exactly sure how much of the traffic congestion came out of the protest, how much of the traffic congestion came out of the regular type of traffic congestion that we get around M50.
Well, I've seen video and we can pass it on to your office if you like.
As I say, look, I know there was traffic congestion, but I mean, that still doesn't...
I mean, there's a row of five cars across the road blocking all the traffic on the N7 leaving Dublin City. Now, just deliberately blocking it. Wasn't the rain. It was, I think, five vehicles who were deliberately blocking the traffic. And that was their intention. And they certainly succeeded in causing massive chaos.
And it is a matter in relation to protests like that for Ungar the Síochána to engage and to ensure that we don't have, as I said, people engaging in activity which is completely disproportionate and is causing a huge impact. People, yes, have the right to protest. People know that. People are protesting in respectful and direct ways all the time. There were people protesting about Gaza. There were people protesting about a whole range of issues. What I would like to see is that we have a response, particularly from An Garda Síochána, to ensure that things like trying to bring the city to a gridlock are not allowed. That's not part of the type of protest we want to see, I want to see in our country.
All right. You're going to buy City West anyway.
There's no decision has been made on that. It's important to note that. I know that there's an awful lot of speculation in relation to that, but no firm decision the government has been actually made on that. We are looking at a programme, and it's in our programme for government statement, that we're looking at buying a number of properties, because one of the key things that myself and Minister Callaghan want to do is bring down the overall cost of how much the system costs the state. And one of the ways we believe we can do that, and having that firmer, fair and effective system I'm talking about, is to have directly state-owned facilities which will be able to provide a one-stop shop as part of the reform of the legislation we're bringing through and getting people through the system on a faster basis.
Finally, Minister, on a different matter, the Children's Health Ireland and that report about a consultant who may have been abusing the NTPF treatment purchase system that's been referred to the Gardaí, and this report having been made several years ago, only presented to the HSE, I think, on Monday week. The government claims to have been blindsided by all of this.
Well, I wouldn't be in a position to comment any more than what you've outlined there. I'm aware that a thing has now been referred to An Garda Síochána, and because of that referral, I would prefer not to engage in any further comment on it.
But you can talk about being blindsided. I mean, well, you don't have to go into the granular detail of what the consultant may or may not have done, but the nature of the report and all the activities, the deficiencies in the conduct of CHI must be deeply shocking.
I think, in fairness, I know that my colleague, Minister Jennifer Carroll-McNeill, has been talking at length on this and has made a number of points already. But I think in light of that referral, I'm going to leave it at that point there and not go any further on it.
OK, Colin Brophy, Minister of State for Migration, thank you very much for joining us.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance.
Weekdays at 9 a.m. on News Talk.